Just like an annual checkup, a credit check can catch trouble before it's serious.
If you're going to pay for a score, you might as well pay for the one that you know your lenders are looking at.
Credit tips, plus good medicine your doctor may not be telling you about. I'm Susan Barnett, and this is 51%, The Women's Perspective. No matter how fiscally conservative you are, your credit score matters. Whether you're buying a car, a house, or buying a new refrigerator with a store credit card, your credit score will determine your interest rate. According to a survey done by a Boston bank, there are over 600 million credit cards issued in the U.S., and in households with ongoing credit card debt, the average balance is over $15,000. Jeannie Kelly is a credit expert and author of The 90-Day Credit Challenge. She talked about good credit, bad credit, and how to figure out what your credit is. I'm going to assume you're a fairly busy woman in this economy. What kind of issues are people coming to you with?
I think 80% of clients come to me because they just don't even know what they're doing wrong. 20% totally know, hey, I filed a bankruptcy or I had a foreclosure, what do I do now? But a lot of my clients, they don't know. Like, they may double up on paying a store credit card and they don't realize that that means if they skip a month and the next month they pay double, that they actually are late. Like, they didn't get it. And they don't realize how one 30-day late on your credit report, so let's say it's a store credit card and the minimum payment was $20. If you miss that and it gets reported on your credit report in the moment, so let's say for December, the month we just passed, that can drop your FICO score almost 100 points.
Which is huge.
Dramatic. You can have perfect credit for 30 years and all of a sudden just in the moment have that late payment and boom, it drops you because it looks like, why are they missing this payment? Why did this just recently happen? So it's so important to be on top of all of the bills. And, you know, a new huge thing that's happening, and this is not really out there enough, that utility companies, such as your electric bill, your gas bill, they are starting to report how you pay. So it's just not your mortgage, your auto loan, your store credit cards, your major credit cards. Now it's things that you're not thinking about. You don't think my electric bill is going to be reporting me. But some, not all of them, and they do have to notify you, except sometimes that fine print on your bill that, you know, that says we are going to start reporting in January 2013, you kind of miss.
Right.
But it's a big new thing, and people are in shock over that because that's a lot of times people are doubling up payments on those things, saying, I paid every other month. What's it matter? But it does. It can impact your credit score a lot.
And when your credit score drops, what does that mean for you in the real world?
Well, it means higher interest rates. You can be going to purchase a new home, and all of a sudden, you know, a really good FICO score, and I keep mentioning FICO score because 90% of lenders pull your FICO score to loan you money. So that's the credit score you really want to pay attention to. And so all of a sudden you go to apply for the mortgage. Let's say your FICO score is a 680. Well, they're giving you the low rate if you were 740 or above. So now what does that mean? The house that you were thinking you could afford, maybe now you can't because you were doing the calculations on the newspaper ad that you saw with the rate that they were offering. So it could be for that. It could be for an auto loan, higher interest rates. People are looking at your credit for jobs now. Certain jobs, if you don't have a certain score, they won't even hire you. So I think your credit is just so important. When you don't have good credit, that's when sometimes you really feel the impact. If you're, you know, using credit all the time and not realizing it, you should start paying attention.
I heard that if you apply for credit, like a car loan, in a number of places because you're shopping, that impacts your credit rating. Is that true?
Every time you apply for credit, and you're applying for credit, so you're not pulling your credit report, you're asking for money, it does count as an inquiry, and it does drop your score. But for mortgages and for cars, they call it rate shopping, you have 30 days that you can have it pulled at several different places, and it will count as only one inquiry. So it is for only those two major purchases, and that's because they want you to shop around and make sure you are getting a good rate and you feel comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
But if you start applying for, you know, you're buying a new home, and then you say, oh, let me go to this store because I need a new stove and I'll get that 15% discount by opening up the charge. Well, yes, you'll get that discount, but that inquiry and that new account will drop your score for a little bit. So you have to be on top of timing. When is it a good time to apply for new credit?
So if we're interested in paying attention to our credit score, which one do we look at?
This is so important. If everybody just even gets this from listening to your show, you want to look at your FICO score. It's F-I-C-O. And the reason why is 90% of lenders look at that score. So you may be purchasing your score because I see those great commercials on TV, or you may go directly to one of the credit bureaus thinking, oh, let me buy my score through them. That's not the same score that is being looked at when you're getting money. So if you're going to pay for a score, you might as well pay for the one that you know your lenders are looking at. You can do this by logging on to myfico.com. There is a fee, but again, you will be getting the score that lenders get.
And what's the number we want to hit?
You want to see 740 or above. Now, just so you know, FICO goes from 300 to 850. But if you're 740 or above, it's basically if you had a report card and you had an A+, you're at A+. Doesn't matter, 800 or so on, you're at that A+ mark.
And I have had the experience, I'm sure other people have as well, you sit down to sign the paperwork for your house and are told that your credit report, and there are three of them, one of them reflects something that you can say that had nothing to do with me. But it's a nightmare to deal with. Is there an easy way?
Well, there's really not an easy way except being aware. My number one rule is be aware of what's being reported about you. So that means every year, at least once a year, and I always say New Year resolutions, this is a good time, pull your credit report from Experian, Equifax, and TransUnion. Review it. See what is correct, because if you are not needing credit at the moment, isn't it great that if in 3 months or 7 months from now you go for that mortgage and you already know what your credit looks like instead of having to deal with it then saying, oh my goodness, these six accounts have nothing to do with me and they're dragging down my FICO score. So if you can do it in advance, that's the best way to do it. And again, being aware. So if there is a mistake, you can dispute the information with the credit bureaus directly. The tricky part is, what if they get back to you and they say, we verified it, it is correct? Then what you have to do is go directly to the source. So if it's a collection company, you have to call the collection company. If it's a creditor reporting the information, and let's just say it's Macy's, you know, you have to call Macy's or you have to call Chase, whoever it is, and deal directly with them. So this is something that takes time. And that's almost why I called my book the 90-Day Credit Challenge, because it does take maybe 90 days to go through all of these steps.
Okay, Jeannie, let's say the damage has already been done and you've gone through some hard economic times. Maybe you've even had a bankruptcy. Now what do you do?
Well, you don't want to be afraid of credit. So what you want to do is you want to rebuild. So you have, you know, the bankruptcy on the credit report, there's nothing you can do about it. It's a public record. It's going to stay on your credit report for 10 years. But what do you do about it? Open up secured credit cards. Say, I want to build up healthy credit, so I don't want to think about credit right now. I just got out of this horrible mess. But maybe in 24 months from now, you may need a new car or you may need something. If you do nothing with your credit, and you just have everything go stale, like the bankruptcy, and I'm walking away from credit, well, in 2 years, there's going to be no improvement. It's just going to be looking how it does today, where at least if you build new, healthier credit, in 2 years from now, you're going to show some new healthy accounts. And so I really think you have to rebuild. And getting secured cards, what that basically means is you're not going to get the traditional credit card where they're giving you, you know, let's say a $1,000 limit. This is something where you're putting money in a bank account and you're putting $500, and then they're giving you a $500 limit. So there's no risk to the bank, but, and then it's used as a regular credit card, so you can use it up to that $500 limit. You get your bill in the mail, you make the payment, you have to forget about that deposit you made. The good thing about these secured accounts, they don't report on your credit report as a secured account. So FICO doesn't know the difference. It just looks like a new credit card account. And again, this is helping you rebuild. You don't want to walk away from credit. It just doesn't seem realistic in these times. You really do need credit.
Jeannie Kelly is a credit expert and author of the 90-Day Credit Challenge. Find out more at jeanniekelly.net. Coming up, effective medicine your doctor may not be telling you about. Plus, the light right before the dark ages. If you missed part of this show or want to hear it again, visit the 51% archives at WAMC.org. This week's show is number 1228. When we talk about alternative medicine, we're usually discussing herbs or something outside traditional Western medicine. But when Julia Shopik talks about alternative medicine, she's talking about FDA-approved medicines and treatments that doctors just don't commonly use. Her book, Honest Medicine, is the result of discovering an effective treatment for her husband, then having his doctor show no interest in it.
It was my aha moment that really made me decide that I was going to have to do something to try to get to the public. I didn't think I'd be able to influence doctors as much, but I could certainly interest patients. My husband was a 15-year brain tumor survivor, and that in itself, with his particular kind of tumor, was very unusual, because the usual amount of time people live with his tumor, they said, was about 3 years, and he lived 15. And we thought that a lot of it was thanks to the really, you know, dietary kinds of things and other things that more are in keeping with what your definition and our definition of alternative is. But the thing was that the doctors weren't at all interested. In 2001, he had a recurrence of his tumor, and this time his suture line would not heal. And he had to undergo, it was 8 operations in addition to the brain tumor surgery. These were just operations to try to get pieces of skin, 2 pieces of skin to heal on his head. And with each surgery, he was becoming sicker and sicker. You know, he was debilitated from the first surgery, so 8 additional ones, even though they weren't brain surgeries, they were skin surgeries, were very hard on him. And he ended up, after this, being brain injured, paralyzed, incontinent. It was horrifying. But then, in conversation with a holistic integrative doctor, I learned about a treatment called Silverlon, which is one of the 4 that I write about in Honest Medicine. And it's FDA approved for all non-healing wounds, and it's been used routinely for diabetic wounds, for burns, and this integrative doctor friend said to me, you know, it would probably work, there's no reason why it wouldn't, on your husband's head. And we got some pieces of material, and the doctors let me put them on Tim's head. This is quite unusual also. They usually don't like you to bring in treatments that are not already in the hospital. And it healed his skin. It began to show signs of healing overnight. And I was so excited. And I found that the doctors not only weren't excited, they definitely weren't interested, but some of them were actually upset that the treatment that worked was not something that they had found. And one doctor put it to me very directly. He said, I don't think it was what you found, with the accent on you. that healed your husband's skin. And I was shocked, you know, because it was quite obvious to me, you know, that it was. And I said, well, what do you think it was? He said, well, I've been thinking. And he furrowed his brow, and he said, I think it was the vancomycin. That's the IV antibiotic that Tim had been on for at least 6 weeks. And I said, but doctor, he's been on vancomycin IV for at least 6 weeks. And the doctor said the words that ring in my ears to this day. He said, vanco is like that. It kicks in. And I was stunned. I mean, he was basically saying that it kicked in on the very day that we put the silver line on Tim's head. So that was what made me decide that something really wrong was going on with conventional medicine. And I was hoping to be able to get the word out there to patients. And I have been able to get the word out about this and three other treatments that I write about in Honest Medicine. The first one I would like to talk about is low-dose naltrexone. I believe that it is the greatest discovery of the 20th century, and I hope that it's used more and more in the 21st century so that it can really change a lot of people's lives the way it already is, but to a greater extent. Low-dose naltrexone is a very, as the term says, low dose of a drug that was FDA approved in the 1980s for another purpose entirely. It was approved for drug and alcohol addiction. And it was approved at a high dose also in the 1980s. And the story is actually told in my book in great detail as to how this doctor, his name is Bernard Bahari, how Dr. Bahari discovered that in very teeny doses, about a tenth of the dose for which it was FDA approved, that it worked to, as he said, modulate the immune system. That means, you know, to level it, the immune system, where it's needed to be. And people started coming from all over the country to Dr. Bernard Bahari, and they came to him for conditions like lupus, especially MS. For some reason, the multiple sclerosis community has just taken it to heart, and a lot of people, thousands and thousands, are using it. But also patients with rheumatoid arthritis, some patients with lupus, with fibromyalgia, all of these diseases, Crohn's, oh my God, Crohn's disease, gets wonderful results with it. Low-dose naltrexone is very, very inexpensive. I'm thinking of doing a volume 2 of my book of Honest Medicine about how just taking low-dose naltrexone and talking about how it works for all different diseases, all different autoimmune diseases.
And yet this is what's really odd, and it makes one wonder what the motivation is. There are medications. When you watch television, there are a million drug commercials now, and there are medications that were initially for something like depression and are now being prescribed for something else because they've been found to be effective perhaps against arthritis. Those are being accepted. Do you believe the problem with the low-dose naltrexone is it's just simply not profitable?
I do. It's been off patent. So no company can make a huge amount of money from this drug.
Julia Shopik is the author of Honest Medicine. Find out more about these and other treatments, including a diet that controls childhood epilepsy, at honestmedicine.com. Finally, Gilles Malkin is back with one of the more dramatic turnarounds in women's history, a woman who started life with few prospects, but who eventually championed women's rights.
In the year 500, in the ancient city of Byzantium, which had become Constantinople in 330 and is today Istanbul, there lived a woman who rose from obscurity to notoriety to empress. Her nerve and moxie saved the monarchy, renovated the city, and instituted significant changes in the lives of the women of her time and ever after. Theodora's parents were not wealthy. Her father worked training bears at the Hippodrome, the entertainment and social center of the day. He died, and Theodora's mother, an actress, developed her and her sisters at a very early age into entertainers whose activities included sinful adult behavior, by means of which the family survived. She must not be confused with Theodora the Saint, wife of Theophilus some 300 years later. By the year 522, Theodora had become a Miaphysite Christian and settled as a wool spinner in Constantinople, and her colorful personality, wit, and charm came to the attention of Justinian, the nephew of the Emperor Justin and the heir to the throne. He became enamored of her, and after the death of Empress Euphemia, Emperor Justin struck down for him the law that forbade kings to marry actresses, and Justinian married Theodora. Her smarts and resourcefulness soon came to the fore, and she became known for her acumen and good sense in the ruler's house and in his affairs of state. As in many kingdoms, there were two principal opposing political factions, in this case, the Greens and the Blues. In 532, a riot broke out from the Hippodrome, and Greens set upon Blues, which included the royal couple, and things looked dark indeed, to the degree that Justinian decided to flee the city. The young empress impressed upon him that they had nothing to lose by staying and fighting, and came up with strategies that carried the day. When the smoke had settled and the streets had been washed, Justinian and Theodora established a rigorous new hierarchy and set about transforming their city into the splendor of the Eastern world. In the religious sector, the Miaphysite Christian group opposed the Chalcedonian Christians. As it happened, Justinian was a Chalcedonian Christian, and so there were many instances of Theodora having to use her wiles to see to it that her church members, the Miaphysites, would survive the intrigues and plots between the emperor and the popes and everyone in between, to the degree that she often secretly intervened in Justinian's plans, concocted alternatives to his orders, and forge escapes and protection for her bishops and church leaders. The friction between them about this never developed into a rift, and after her death, Justinian sought to bring peace to the two factions. 10 years into their union, the bubonic plague struck the city. 10,000 people died every day, until a third of the city populace was gone, and the royal couple just barely escaped joining them. The writers of the day noted that there was a great perplexity as to who would die and who wouldn't. It's only been recently discovered that a gene called Delta 32, when inherited from both parents, ensures survival by turning off the receptors on the surface of white blood cells, which the virus needs in order to attach itself. But the disaster had its effect nonetheless, and the decimation helped pave the way for the Dark Ages. Theodora's progressive approach to laws over women were enlightened for her time, making her an ancient precursor of feminism. She did away with the death penalty for adultery and created it for rape, protected women's rights concerning their own children, property, and divorce. She closed brothels and built a convent for the prostitutes. As well-meaning as this idea may have been, it's said that the gals had a bit of trouble adapting to that less festive way of life. Theodora died at age 48 in 548, it is thought, of cancer. Thank you for listening. For 51% and Women in History, I'm Gilles Malkin.
Gilles Malkin is a writer and musician. He lives in New York's Catskill Mountains. That's our show for this week. Thanks to Katie Britton for production assistance. Our theme music is by Kevin Bartlett. This show is a national production of Northeast Public Radio. Our executive producer is Dr. Alan Shartok. If you'd like to hear this show again or visit the 51% archives, go to our website at wamc.org. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll be back next week with another edition of 51%, The Women's Perspective.